When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number three here on this Thursday on the Early Line on Sports Grid, our third and final up until 11 a.m. Eastern. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. One more hour to go and a ton to get to. We'll go all around the Major League Baseball diamond on this Thursday. Just nine games on this short slate for a Thursday, either starting Memorial Day weekend or ending out a couple of midweek sets like Donnie's Fightins on the road in Coors Field, who have scored a ton of runs so far this week in Denver. For the game or for the Philadelphia Phillies as a team?
The Fightin' Phils.
Oh, goodness. They have scored at least seven in all three of their victories so far against the Rocks at Coors Field. Yeah. Nine in two of the three victories so far in the first three games of this four-game midweek set. So we'll go all around Major League Baseball, get you set with everything you need to know. Of course, we dive even deeper in a game number two tonight in Oklahoma City of the Western Conference Finals. Can the Thunder take a commanding and decisive 2-0 series advantage on their home floor tonight against Minnesota, or might the Timberwolves have something to say about the competition level in this Western Conference Finals set? The jack of all trades, Tom Vecchia, will be here later in this hour, and I'm sure that is all we will discuss with Tom Vecchia here in hour number three.
Yeah, it should be some good stuff to get brought up, too, because maybe tonight not fall asleep in the fourth quarter. It looks like the game is a blowout in hand and ride it all the way through. But I am talking about taking the Minnesota Timberwolves tonight. We'll have some more conversations about that a little bit later. Maybe the attack mode here, and are you getting now a bargain basement price on Anthony Edwards, Ben? Maybe you are. Yeah. Yep.
We'll talk all about it. All the prop angles, the matchup advantages to highlight, and now a new MVP in the association who resides in Oklahoma City. That is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But before we get to all of that, action on the MLB diamond on this Thursday. Of course, the big story yesterday in sports outside of the Eastern Conference Finals during those primetime hours, the Tush Push lives to fight another day, at least another NFL season in 2025. We have given our assessment on it. You have heard from Mark Zeno. Maybe you have read the reports. But what do you all have to say about the Tush Push? Did the NFL owners ultimately make the right decision? That was the question in Fade the Public. At Sports Grid on Twitter, did the NFL do the right thing? Not banning the tush push. Your two options. Yes, they should have kept it. No, they should have banned it. Well, most of the public DRS, nearly 66% of these votes, that's almost a supermajority that the Green Bay Packers proposal failed to receive yesterday in the Twin Cities, saying yes, the NFL, the decision makers, the owners made the right call to keep the tush push. I assume, DRS, you are not fading the public.
No, I didn't fade the public. And again, I expected this to be a little bit closer, to be honest, because there's always a lot of haters out there like, hate the Eagles, don't like the franchise, take it away from them. And, you know, some people would do the same thing. If Dallas was using the tush push to their advantage, I probably would say, like, you know what, even if I like the play, I'm still going to say I don't like the play because the Dallas Cowboys are doing that, or the New York Giants, or the Washington Commanders. So I'm actually surprised that it's going that far. But also, let's understand, like, the way we get to this level, too, on the tush push, where, you know, most people say it is a football play. Oh, it's rugby, it's interesting. And but then the NFL saying, you know what, we don't like the optics of the play. And at the same time, the NFL saying, you know what they like the optics of? When you're trying to stop the clock, you hurry up to the line of scrimmage and spike the football immediately into your feet, but somehow that's not intentional grounding. Or, Ben, how many times do you see this? Hey, oh my goodness, I'm getting a pass rush here. It's a screen pass. Let me spike the football into the ground and have a referee come in like, no. The running back was 8 yards away. That was the intended receiver there. There are many plays in football with terrible optics, but apparently the optics they don't like are the tush push for whatever known reason. We will never know at this point. Sooner than later, the play is probably going to get banned, and maybe we're a year away from the Eagles being dominant, but also if more teams participate in it, maybe it's not so bad of a play, because the same thing, Ben, with the optics, hey, Kansas City spikes the ball into the ground. Let's take it away. No, everybody has a chance to abuse that rule and does it on a day-to-day basis and a game-to-game basis. Maybe if more people participated in the tush push, like, wow, we can get easy first downs right here. This is great. Maybe it'll stay and more teams will actually like it. How about those optics?
Yeah, and DRS, I think optics are a big part of this conversation and perhaps why most of the public optically said the NFL made the right call to keep the tush push in place. Because oftentimes when there is a rule proposal, it is done either first and foremost for player health and safety and try to benefit the game that way, or because a team has exploited a competitive advantage in the rules and thus the rule needs to be changed. But one team, because of a loophole, that's not what Philadelphia has done in this place. The tush push or the brotherly shove or anything of the sort is open for all 32 NFL organizations. And as Philadelphia has constantly reminded us, to their credit, they have invested in putting this play in place over the last four NFL seasons. And having a guy like Jalen Hurts, the quarterback who is perfect to drive that pile, and investing in their high-priced offensive line, and having one of the best O-line coaches in the National Football League, in countless hours of practice to make this play precise. So the Eagles should reap the rewards when other teams just certainly have not put the amount of resources into this sort of play, into the tush push, like the Eagles have. And Donnie, I think optically, with Philadelphia winning the most recent Super Bowl championship, that most recent Lombardi Trophy a season ago, it would have been a bad look optically for the NFL. And maybe we'll point and laugh at the Green Bay Packers, but it really should be shared. This is not all on the Packers. In fact, there were 22 teams in total that voted yes to ban the tush push. And as we got further reporting yesterday in the aftermath of the ownership voting in Minneapolis, it was basically the Packers being used as a figurehead because they do not have a sole individual who can take the blame from other NFL owners or the rest of the NFL. The Packers being used by the league office, by Commissioner Roger Goodell, because optically they did not like the play. And that, I think, rubs some of the NFL owners as we got the reports the wrong way. Hey, buddy, we're your boss. You don't tell us what to do just because you think this play looks a little bit uglier than the other football plays. So I'm not so sure the other nine teams, DRS, that voted with Philadelphia to keep the tush push alive did it because they love the play or they love Philadelphia or they support the Eagles in what they do from the competitive aspect. I think a lot of them said, listen, you don't tell us what to do just because you don't like something from the looks of it and you use one of our other NFL organizations to kind of be the team that you use to put this proposal in place.
Exactly. And then you take a look also, if you are 32 offensive coordinators in the NFL, you should love this play. What an advantage. Like, boy, I can get a fourth and one at anywhere on the field and convert that first down and keep the football and keep driving. And this, the NFL has always told us over the past 15 to 20 years, every rule change we make is going to benefit the offense. Now you would take something away from the offense, which you like offense, right? Do you want a coffin corner kick at the 50-yard line, or would you rather the Philadelphia Eagles and any other team get a first down and continue and drive scoring, which is what everybody bets on and everybody loves? And maybe the dumbest quote that came out yesterday, which I love Ben Johnson. I think he's one of the best knowledgeable offensive coordinators you have. He says, quote, "Have you ever seen a tush push become an explosive play? I like explosive plays. I like big plays. I'm not a big fan of the tush push." Just asinine for a guy that says. So basically you're saying, I don't like first downs and rather would have a super risky play on fourth and one than get the automatic first down. Downgrade on Ben Johnson in aisle one.
The Bears did not, of course, vote in favor of the tush push being successful. They voted for the proposed ban. Plenty more on the early line here in our third and final hour next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
A 9-game slate around Major League Baseball on this Thursday to preview for you here on the Early Line on Sports Grid. From the mind of Donnie Wrightside, it's Donnie's Diamond Dash, Donnie's Diamond Plays around the bases with Donnie Wrightside. Let's get to it for this 9-game slate in America. What?
Betting around the bases, man. Let's keep it all uniform.
Donnie's Daily Bases? That was a good thing we used to do. All right, the Seattle Mariners on the road tonight in Houston against the Astros. An AL West rivalry and a divisional duel. The nightcap of our 9-game slate on this Thursday. DRS, good news for Seattle. Welcome back George Kirby, making his season debut. Yep. Another talented arm in that Mariners starting staff makes his season debut tonight. And Seattle, a road favorite tonight against the Astros. Lance McCullers on the other side for Houston. 8.5 is that total. What do you like here?
Taking a look at Lance McCullers, I don't like anything that I'm seeing out of him. This is one of the young up-and-coming pitchers of the past couple years that we thought maybe would be on a trajectory to be a Hall of Fame-type pitcher, but injuries really have derailed his career. And you take a look at only 45 batters that he's faced this season. How about a 143 ISO, which isn't all that bad, but a 397 weighted on-base percentage, and lefty batters getting the best of him to a 235 ISO and a weighted on-base percentage of 378. The reason why we bring up those lefty batters in the lineup, J.P. Crawford's last month, a 371 weighted on base percentage. Jorge Polanco, 436 weighted on base percentage. Cal Raleigh, 377 weighted on base percentage, with a couple of those guys, including Rowdy Tellez, with high ISO power numbers against. It's a shame we don't have the roof open in Houston, because 86 degree temperatures, slight little wind blowing out the left field into those Crawford boxes would have been great. We don't know technically what we're getting out of Kirby, but I got a feeling what we're getting out of Lance McCullers, and it isn't necessarily going to be very good. By far, give me the Mariners, minus 130 price. I'll take that. And maybe a couple RBI shots here from Jorge Polanco and Cal Raleigh to mix in some plus money. I just can't take Lance McCullers, Ben. I can't do it.
Yeah, DRS, it is such a good point. When the Astros were making their playoff runs, he was kind of that up-and-coming guy that was sensational during the playoffs. But to your point, some injuries have kind of derailed his career, at least at its peak, to this stage. The Seattle Mariners, DRS, in that top spot in the American League West, 28-20. They won their midweek set, taking 2 of 3 against the White Sox, as everybody should. Seattle playing pretty good baseball, and the only team that is more than two games above 500, 28-23 and a half games in front of Houston. The Astros, the second best record in the American League West, 25-24. The Astros have been basically a 500 team the entirety of this season, and they're opening 49 games. They have never been better than three games above 500. That was their peak, by the way, earlier this week, before dropping the final two games of their midweek set on the road in Tampa against the Rays. But the Astros have also never been worse than two games below 500. Important divisional rivalry starting this weekend with a four-game set in Houston. DRS, let's get to the series finale between the New York Yankees and another American League West team. That would be the Texas Rangers. This series coming to a close with some early day baseball. I wonder if they get this one in up in the Bronx. The Yankees greater than $1.50 favorite today at home against Texas. Total at 7. Weather is miserable here today in the greater New York City area. Minus 156 for what should be, on paper, a good pitching matchup. Carlos Rodon for the Pinstripes. Nathan Eovaldi on the other side for the Rangers.
Low 50s, rain, double-digit wind blowing in from right field. A lot of similarities, Ben, that we saw last night in the Bronx, where I really like the under, and I love the solo home run as a walk-off by Dominguez, because that was a 4-3 final in a 7.5 total game. That goes to extras. There's no way you're going to end up winning that game. So that was a good one yesterday. Nathan Eovaldi just might be the best pitcher on the card. Take a look at his last 30 days, by the way. Analytically, 30 2/3 innings pitched. How about an ERA of .59 and an xFIP number, the best on the card of the past month, starting today at 2.54. You look at his 114 batters that he's faced, an 037 ISO and a weighted on base percentage of 190. Eovaldi has been tremendous. But also understand this. The New York Yankees bats against right-handed pitching for the past month, they have been sensational as well. Take away Vivas and Paul Goldschmidt, everybody, high ISO power numbers, high weighted on base percentage. But in this type of atmosphere, meaning low 50s rain and cooler conditions with the wind blowing in, advantage Nathan Eovaldi. Now on the opposite side, Carlos Rodon. Why did we also like yesterday Ryan Yarbrough? He's not a great pitcher, but he's a left-handed pitcher. And the one thing I told you yesterday is Texas doesn't hit left-handed pitching all that well. Same guys, Langford and Jung, positive numbers. Everybody else, brutal. This game screams another under in the Bronx today, if we even get it to play.
Yeah, DRS, it's supposed to be consistent rain the entirety of the afternoon into the evening hours, early morning on a Friday as well here in New York. We hope to get it in. The Yankees then depart for a West Coast trip. They go to Colorado first, then they will be in L.A. against both the Angels and the Dodgers. A weekend set against the Rockies, that's good for New York. Texas on a getaway day as well. They will this weekend. I am blanking on the team they are playing. Oh, the White Sox is where they go up next. Speaking of the American League Central, the Detroit Tigers win their midweek set against the St. Louis Cardinals, taking the final two games of that series. The Guardians, because of bad weather in Minneapolis, only two completed games against Minnesota. They lost the suspended game from Monday yesterday early, did respond, taking the finale against the Twins. An American League Central duel this weekend in Detroit, the first of four, DRS, today in the Motor City. Jack Flaherty on the bump for the Tigers. Minus 142, that money line price. Tanner Bibee gets the start for Cleveland. Total at 8. What's the play today in Motown?
Hey, here's a, like, it's 53 degrees, similar that we talked about in the Bronx. Yeah. There's no rain, which is positive. Instead of a wind blowing in, it's actually blowing out at double digits to center field. But still, temperatures in the low 50s never help. You take a look at Bibee on the mound. Last 126 batters he's faced over the past month, a 169 ISO, about average, and a 313 weighted on base percentage. That's about average as well. Much better than his season long totals, where he got beat up just a little bit. I really like that Detroit lineup. I do. Left-handed bats can really get going. Kerry Carpenter, Zach McKinstry, Riley Green, Cole Keith, Trey Sweeney, the same guys that we speak about. And then, of course, Torkelson in the middle of that lineup. If we flip it over to Cleveland, going up against Flaherty, he has struggled a little bit here with his non-analytical numbers, like the ISO and the weighted on base percentages against lefty and righties. But having said that, I still look at the eight. It's cold temperatures. I'm always going to lean towards the under. Don't care where that wind is blowing here. Give me warmer temperatures. Maybe we look at an over here, but I can't take the over in this game here today. I just can't.
Let's get some warm weather. It's baseball. It's springtime. Yeah. More next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Nine-game slate on this Thursday in Major League Baseball. We continue our breakdowns daily basis from Donnie Wrightside here on this Thursday morning. DRS, we just talked about the Tigers, 33-17, best record in the bigs. Mm-hmm. In fact, the only team in the American League to reach that 30-win benchmark just yet. The Yankees, 29-19, a home favorite today if the game is played against the Texas Rangers to pull off the sweep. Four teams in the NL have posted 30 wins already this year. Mets, Cubs, Dodgers, and the best record in the National League. The hottest team in the NL, winners of six in a row. That would be Donnie's Philadelphia Phillies, looking for a four-game series sweep in the midweek against the Colorado Rockies. The Phils, of course, a great opportunity to do so with some afternoon baseball there under the Rocky Mountains. Donnie, we've seen some pretty big numbers in favor of the Phils this week. None bigger than this one for the fourth and final game of this set. Minus 300, the number in favor of Philadelphia. Total stands at 11. Of course, we expect the Phillies to pull off the four-game sweep over the Rockies. Just how much offense might we see today at Coors?
I think we'll see a lot of it there. And by the way, at the FanDuel Sportsbook, it is plus money, but the Phillies team total today, 7.5 runs. If you want to bet the over, you do get the plus 110 price, which is crazy. You need 8 runs for the Philadelphia Phillies to cash that in, but they've been having a really good time out at Coors Field. They might continue today. 73 degrees temperatures here, light wind blowing in from right field, no precipitation in the forecast. That's great. Germán Márquez, over his last 30 days, how about a strikeout rate, Ben, of 8.7%? That is disaster, which means if you're not striking guys out of Coors, that ball's in play, which means runs will be scored. And also looking at a Phillies lineup against right-handed pitching over the last month that has been so good at putting the ball in play with not a lot of strikeouts, that could be a recipe for disaster. Now flip it over to the other side, Ranger Suarez, who the Phillies are getting back into the rotation. 72 batters he's faced, Ben, over the past 30 days. How about an 0.75 ISO against and a 267 weighted on base percentage, a K rate of 24%. There's nothing really that the Colorado Rockies should be able to do to Ranger Suarez. But also, limited at bats here for the Rockies. They've done well against left-handed pitchers. That'll be interesting to watch. So if you're looking from an analytical spot, the Phillies should hit. Do I want to take them over a team total of 7.5? No, I don't care what world we live in. Like 7 runs, hey, one. Oh, I lost that bet. You got to get out of town at that point here. But for me, the Phillies should win, maybe a parlay piece, but not really enthused about going after that because of that total price point as well, along with the team total. You might look at RBI props, but again, understand, if your team total is 7.5, you're not getting bargains on that either. It's like saying, man, every week I want to take the best running back in football to go over his yards prop. Yeah, but it's 98.5. What value are you getting at that point? The Phillies should win. The game probably will go over the 11.5, but I probably won't have any bets in this game, as crazy as it sounds, just because of the price points here.
All three games so far in this series, at least 11 runs scored combined between the two clubs. The Phils have scored at least 7 in all three games, 9 in 2 of the 3, including yesterday. Ranger Suarez making his 4th start of the year. Donnie was roughed up in a season debut in early May by the Arizona Diamondbacks, but in his previous 2 starts where he has gone 7 innings each, a total of 3 earned allowed. Really, Ranger Suarez adding to a staff that has been dynamite this year. Zach Wheeler, Christopher Sanchez, and Jesus, Christopher Sanchez, right?
Yeah.
And Jesus Sanchez as well.
Both of them in there. Jesus Luzardo.
Jesus Luzardo.
Sanchez.
Excuse me.
Jesus
Sanchez plays where? In Miami, right? If I'm not mistaken.
I think
all
so,
right.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of baseball mess-ups today, but that's all right. Can the San Diego Padres snap a 5-game slide today, avoiding a sweep in Toronto against the Blue Jays, where the Padres' run differential this week in Toronto, negative 17. They were beat 3-0 in the opener. Yesterday, 14-0 by the Blue Jays. DRS, what's the play today up in the 6?
Somebody's got to wake up on offense here for the Padres, and today should be the perfect day to do it. Oh, look at the cold temperatures. It's a dome. We're not worried anything about that. You scored 2 touchdowns yesterday in that dome for Toronto, 0 for San Diego. Look at Bowden Francis. Last month, 110 batters he's faced, man. A 314 ISO and a 445 weighted on base percentage combined. That's not 10 batters. That's not 15. That's 110 batters. Too many walks. Not enough strikeouts here. Too many balls in play. That's going to affect you. And also, Francis over the past month, 23 and a third innings pitched. How about an 8 ERA and a 5.16 xFIP number? I'm telling you, if they don't hit today, you got to get worried about the Padres. That team total, you should be able to take it with confidence today. Don't care what they've been doing over the past couple days. They better hit today. If not, ring the alarm, man. Something is wrong with the Pods.
In this 5-game skid, the Padres have scored a total of 3 runs. Yep. Their starter, Stephen Kolek, the brother of Tyler Kolek, who plays in the NBA. I know that fact. More on the early line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on this Thursday on the early line on Sports Grid. It is game number 2 of the Western Conference Finals tonight in Oklahoma City between the Thunder and the Timberwolves. Of course, OKC, the 1 seed in the Western Conference. Now with the official NBA MVP in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for this season, won the opening game of this set, DRS, by 26 by winning the 3rd and 4th quarters by a combined 30 points. The Thunder trailing by 4 at the break in the opening half of game number 1, rallied in a big way in the 2nd. Of course, that was only a full day off from a game 7 victory of the Nuggets. Will some of that lack of rest catch up with OKC tonight? Can Minnesota make this a series, either evening us up at 1 game apiece or at least looking competitive to give us some hope that this will not be decided in just 4 or maybe 5 games? 7.5-point spread tonight for game 2 in OKC in favor of the Thunder. Total on the rise. Once again, it was 215 just about an hour ago. Currently 216.5 on the FanDuel Sportsbook. DRS, what is your expectation for game number 2 of the Western Conference Finals?
A close game at the minimum here for the Minnesota Timberwolves with a legitimate chance to pull the upset tonight and get this series tied 1-1 before heading back to Minnesota. If we do get this 1-1, we are going to be heading for a 7-game series because I don't think the Minnesota Timberwolves will sweep OKC heading back to Minneapolis. But then again, that would be 2-2 and then give it to the Thunder game number 3, almost similar to the way that the Denver Nuggets series had played out. But also understand this, you got to bring it tonight, Timberwolves. OKC is not going to lay down, hey, we're the top seed, we won game number 1. Let's see what happens in game number 2. No, they're looking to go up 2-0 and really put the screws to your franchise before you even hit your home court for game number 3. If we look at the 7.5 points, it seems like it is a lot, but also that line, which was 7.5 and sevens and dropping by the hour before we played game number 1, I wasn't buying into it because I liked Oklahoma City. I just liked the fact that they were in playoff mode, as I continue to talk about, and in that rhythm of playing every other day, and the Minnesota Timberwolves had a couple days off, which some some people would use to their advantage. Say, oh, they're rested, they're ready, the other team's running off adrenaline. I use it now to say, okay, is that adrenaline still going to be there from the previous series where you're just playing every other night? But now the Minnesota Timberwolves, who 48 hours ago lost a basketball game, had a day to regroup, back in playoff mode, and I think that works in their favor. Because for me, I don't think we're going to see the same type of game where it's close in the first half and pull away by OKC and the offense doesn't work for the Timberwolves. I think there's going to be a lot of changes tonight, which includes the urgency for the Timberwolves to understand the task at hand. You can't go down 0-2. So I do think we get more of a fight from the Timberwolves. A legitimate chance for the Timberwolves to win outright, yes. Yeah. But I really do like, Ben, the 7.5 points in this game with the T-Wolves.
DRS, I thought you and I had a pretty good assertion of this series entering game one. OKC probably riding the wave of that momentum from a huge 32-point win in game seven to winning game number one even comfortably as just a 7-point favorite in the Western Conference Finals. Did we expect a 3-point rout in that second half, a 26-point margin in the game overall? Probably not, but still, OKC taking advantage of being on their home floor to take a 1-0 series lead to begin the Western Conference Finals. But I also think both you and I believe that Minnesota is not going down without a fight here in this series. That ultimately, OKC probably represents the Western Conference in the NBA Finals. But the Timberwolves are not just going to be walked over in the Western Conference Finals for a second consecutive season. And I think that is critical tonight. To at least stay within the number. Would not be surprised by any means if the Timberwolves win outright. But if this series is going to see more than five games, Minnesota needs to cover tonight as the underdog. They have been a dog just four times so far in this postseason run, including in game number one, now 2-2 straight up and against the spread. Of course, the Thunder have been at least a 5-point favorite in all 12 of their playoff contests so far, 5-7 against the spread, but all five covers. OKC has won in a very large way by at least 19 points. DRS, all day on Tuesday ahead of game one, total was on its way up, 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 closing at 218 and a half, 219, even in some spots, stayed well under. Minnesota only able to register 88 points. Total now working its way back up again. What do you think of our offensive output tonight in OKC?
I think it'll be a little bit better because I do think Minnesota's side will be better. OKC is still going to bring great defense. We understand they play at their home. They'll be comfortable. Their bench players should play well as well. They should be well into the 100s for my money. But if Minnesota pulls up tonight, Ben, and ends up in the 90s again, we might be looking at a five-game series at best at that point because that's the expectation. Like, OKC is going to bring it. They were the best team in the NBA. 68 wins, home court advantage, number one seed. The expectations are there to be dominant on a night-to-night basis. But also Minnesota didn't get here by luck. Like, yes, they did get a little bit lucky with an injury here for, you know, Steph Curry. But at the same time, they pummeled that Warriors team 4-1 there. Oh, nobody. What? Lakers healthy in the playoffs? LeBron James, Luka Doncic, absolutely put them away in five games. The offense has always been there. It wasn't there in the second half of game number one. I expect things to change. I expect a couple performers on the Timberwolves certainly to improve their performances from game number one. But if this game is going over, you know, that's a correlation to Minnesota playing much better than they did in game number one. If this game goes under, I would be hard-pressed to figure it was because Minnesota scored 98 points and won the game because OKC couldn't score. I expect better offense from Minnesota and a better performance from Minnesota, the same performance, if you will, for OKC. That's an over the total for me.
Yeah, NDRS, of course, that starts with Anthony Edwards. He cannot be option B or even 1A. He needs to be 1 and then some. Only 18 points in game number one. Not atrocious. 5 of 13 from the floor, 3 of 8 from deep. But as the Ant-Man said after the opening game of the Western Conference Finals, I need to be more aggressive. I need to shoot more. Secondly, certainly in the moments that matter most, like in that second half. The points prop for Anthony Edwards entering game one was 25.5. If I am not mistaken, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at 31.5. He stayed barely under but did score 31 with 20 points coming in the second half, 11 from the charity stripe. But we focus on Anthony Edwards first and foremost. What does he need to do tonight, DRS, for the Timberwolves to even cover the number and keep this game close?
He's got to be in the high 20s or low 30s. There's no question about it. He's the best player they have on their team. Love what Julius Randle did in game number one. Julius Randle sits at 19.5 in game number two, but the focus is on Anthony Edwards, no doubt in my mind. And also, as you talk about, on that opening number, he opened up at some outlets 27.5 as his points prop, yeah. And it slowly came down during the day. And, you know, look, I bet that. I love the under for Anthony Edwards, and he didn't even get 20 points in the last game. So it's like, all right, understanding the task at hand. Loved OKC game number one. Loved Anthony Edwards to the under. Complete role reversal for me in game number two. I really like the Minnesota Timberwolves at 7.5, but you know what? I might like even more the points prop for Anthony Edwards. Come on now. I don't. Lou Dort's a great defender, and that's part of the handicap for game number one. But sometimes as a superstar, you have to take things in your own hand because it was just so easy. Everybody would just get a defensive stalwart and say, yeah, Anthony Edwards can't beat us here. It's up to the superstar to impose his will on the defender. Get to the free throw line. Make your three-point shots. And I didn't see that graphic correctly here, which Anthony Edwards, the longest shooting distance of his career, came in game number one. Come on, man. You're too big, talented, and powerful not to get to the rim and get those easy buckets, which is what you need. 24.5, I love Anthony Edwards to get over that price point tonight, Ben. I do.
Completely agree, DRS. And then you need the secondary members to help as well. Julius Randle has been sensational in this playoff run. 24-plus now in five consecutive games was Minnesota's leading scorer in game number one with 28. But you need a lot out of Anthony Edwards. You also need guys like Naz Reid, Dante DiVincenzo, and Nickeil Alexander-Walker not to be atrocious off the bench. They were a combined 5 of 28 from three key scorers in that second unit. Jalen Williams, solid in game one. Chet Holmgren, solid in game one. How about Kenrick Williams off the bench? A perfect 3 of 3 from the floor, 2 of 2 from deep, and playing some excellent defense as well. OKC has a lot of horses that can run in this series. A lot of depth and balance for this Thunder side. We'll dive even deeper into the prop perspective for game two tonight in OKC with TV Tom Vecchio of Sports Grid up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Live right here on this Thursday on the Early Line on Sports Grid, our next guest provides that prop perspective at all times. It is TV Tom Vecchio of Sports Grid, a man with many names, right? The jack of all trades, the home run prop king, and the weird pizza eater is here on this Thursday on TV. You knew it was coming up at least once. We don't have we show the photo.
Listen, I texted Joe yesterday. I said I would come on the show if there was no pizza slander. And now I may just have to close out the window and leave you guys hanging for two segments.
Wow.
This is unbelievable.
Now, I was going to make my one joke, and that was it. I did not know that the pizza photo would be included. But Donnie got some pizza yesterday for his big lunch. Tom's getting chirped. Shout out Kristen Hess, by the way. Loyal Sports Grid viewer and listener. We appreciate her engagement at all times. But Vecchio was getting heckled a little bit. Donnie, how was your pizza yesterday?
Delicious. I mean, anytime you get a good slice of pizza, it's great. And of course, like when I go out to eat, met the wife at a local pizza shop that makes fantastic pizza. She beat me there, put in the order. So she's like, what do you want? Of course, a large pizza gets thrown in there. Split a nice little cheesesteak yesterday. She had a separate slice of Sicilian pizza. It was a delicious lunch overall from a couple that's very much in love. How about that?
I thought you didn't watch the show, brother. No need to goose her up in that way, but credit to you for doing so. All right, Vecchio, last pizza conversation on the Early Line today. That is my promise to you. Let's talk about even crazier things than a See, I was going to make a pizza joke again. Let's just talk about crazy things that happened last night in Manhattan inside Madison Square Garden. That would be the Indiana Pacers coming all the way back to beat the Knicks in game number one of the Eastern Conference Finals, 138-135 in overtime. Vecchio, as you're sitting there watching the game last night, the Knicks up by 17 with over 6 minutes remaining in regulation. Up 14 with 2:45 left in regulation. Up 8 with about 34 ticks remaining in regulation. In the late game drama from Aaron Nesmith and, of course, Tyrese Halliburton, what was your reaction to what we saw last night inside the world's most famous arena?
Well, ultimately, I don't think my takes are dramatic or any different than you would hear anywhere else. Like, it got to the end of the game and the Knicks looked tired. I mean, that is pretty evident. And, you know, this whole thing of like rest versus rust, we always can have that conversation. But my takeaways from the game start early, where the team started off, what were they, 7 of 7 combined, 8 of 8 combined, to start to like a lot of scoring really, really early. And then obviously we saw the Knicks pull away and then the Pacers kind of punched back and obviously had this dramatic ending. But the efficiency from both teams, way too high than what I was ultimately expecting. Now, I was here on Monday talking about that I did like the over 223, and we got there in regulation, so we didn't need to get there in overtime. But the defensive changes have to come through early. They can't allow either team to get off to a super hot start, and then they obviously need to tighten things up. Like Nesmith shooting 5 threes, 6 threes late in the game. The defensive assignments need to be taken care of. And like Josh Hart slipped a couple times, and I don't want to like blame it on that, but they need to tighten up on defense on both sides, whether it's the drop coverage or whatever changing. That needs to be fixed. So I don't mind waiting, because 227 is a big adjustment from 223. I don't mind waiting to see how the game starts and then playing it live, whether there's great defense, we can jump in a live under, or there's a lot of scoring and say, hey, we just got to roll with it for the first few games. There's going to be points, points, points.
Changes have been made here. Also, talking about the FanDuel Sportsbook on the series outlook now, coming in as a favorite around a minus 145 price or so in the favor of the New York Knicks after that game one loss, which was an excruciating loss. And now the Pacers wind up a minus 166 live price on the FanDuel Sportsbook. Is it buy-in time on the New York Knicks around that plus 140 price dog?
Yeah, I think that's the way to play. Like, if you do not have a ticket on this series, whatever it might be, obviously you don't want to trust the Knicks. You're not laying minus 230 on the money line. You don't want to lay -5.5 considering the late game collapse that they just had. You could honestly play the Knicks on the series, and then you're working with something that you could then get the Pacers coming back in game three. If the Knicks do tie it up, like, this is a good spot. And I talk about taking the Pacers series price on BATR last Saturday. It's like, listen, they're going to come away with one of the first two games. You can play them there, and then you'll have some flexibility as the series moves on. I think it's totally fine to take the Knicks at this point.
A historic comeback for Indiana, but I still feel like we all believe this is probably going to see at least 6, if not 7 games going the entire distance here in the Eastern Conference Finals. Do we feel the same way about the Western Conference Finals? We get to game number 2 tonight in Oklahoma City. The Thunder winning the opening game of this set by 26, a 7.5-point favorite for game number 2, and a total on the rise now at 216 and a hook. Vecchio, in terms of the overall duration of this series, how crucial is it for Minnesota to be competitive tonight to make this a tightly contested Western Conference Finals?
Not only be competitive, I legitimately think they need to come away with the win tonight if they're going to have a shot in this series. If they don't come away with this win, I would say it's 5 games, maybe 6, at like maybe 6. But realistically, I think we'd be looking at 5 games if OKC comes away with the win tonight. If the Timberwolves can get this, they obviously then split when they're back at home, then we're going to be in for a series. But it has to start early. You guys were just talking about Ant Edwards coming out strong. You could play his first quarter prop, whatever it might be. The issue for the Timberwolves, and I spoke about this on Monday, I talked about Rudy Gobert under 9.5 points. That prop has dropped to 6.5. Gobert and Mike Conley are just non-factors on offense. It's just like they're going out there saying, Edwards, Julius Randle, save us. Like, maybe we get a little bit of scoring from McDaniels. You get Naz Reid and DiVincenzo, who weren't good in the first game, but those are the players that need to step up. So defensively, when I'm looking at this, I'm saying like, okay, Rudy Gobert, score 5, 6, 7, 8 points. Mike Conley, the same. Like, you have two starters that are going to combine for fewer than 15 points. They're non-factors on offense. Those are the players that have to step up, because defensively, they just throw whatever they want at Randle and Ant, and they can stop them, and then no one else is scoring.
Only 88 points for the T-Wolves in the opening game. Vecchio, what is your favorite prop play for game number 2 of the Western Conference Finals tonight?
It's got to be Hartenstein for the Thunder under 8.5 points, 6 of 8 in game one. Listen, they're going to be scoring, the Thunder, that is. But again, it's going to be coming mostly from SGA, the new MVP. We're going to be seeing plenty of scoring from Jalen Williams, but we're just not going to see a whole lot from Hartenstein. Chet Holmgren will have his role with players off the bench, but it's just not his role to score a ton at that high of a rate.
Yeah, best play tonight for game two of the Western Conference Finals. Plenty of action to get to with TV Tom on the ice in the Stanley Cup postseason up next. But now we say farewell to our guy, DRS. Enjoy the Moneyline DRS on this Thursday. We'll talk tomorrow. More on the Early Line up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Of course, there was one historic comeback last night in the postseason with all the focus and all the eyeballs on Madison Square Garden, Indiana, with a dramatic and historic rally to steal game number one of the Eastern Conference Finals against the Knicks inside Madison Square Garden. But maybe you were paying attention to what was happening on the ice in game number one of the Western Conference Finals in Dallas as well. The Stars on home ice, trailing 3-1 entering the third and final period. They scored 5 unanswered goals, Tom, straight to win 6-3 and take a 1-0 series lead in the Western Conference Finals over the Oilers with that 6-3 game one win. 5 goals straight in the third period. How did Dallas do it to win game number one?
Well, obviously, Dallas is awesome. I'll be honest. I was on the Oilers' money line last night, you know, just partly a hedge because I do have a Dallas future. And, like, my ultimate takeaway from this game is the same thing I've said at times where it's like Stuart Skinner isn't a top-tier goalie. And, like, the line I want to keep using is, like, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing us that Stuart Skinner was some elite goalie when, in fact, he's not. Like, he succeeded last year because the team in front of him is so good. But on a one-on-one basis, like, sure, Jake Ondra had his struggles in that game. He's been good this postseason. He has been great, but he is better compared to Stuart Skinner. And I would say that the defensive players, especially that Myra Heiskanen is back for Dallas, are so much better than what we have on the Oilers side of things. So the Dallas offense can go toe-to-toe with the Oilers, but the Oilers defense can't go toe-to-toe with the Dallas defense.
Tyler Seguin, a couple of goals last night for the Stars in a dramatic rally with a 5-goal third period for Dallas to go up 1-0. Vecchio, the Stars have home ice advantage, and they were slightly favored on the money line last night, around minus 128. But entering the opening game of the Western Conference Finals, it was Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and the Oilers, an ever-so-slight series outright favorite to get back to a second consecutive Stanley Cup final. Dallas makes good on being a home ice favorite in game one, and now the Stars, a pretty hefty favorite to win the Western Conference crown. You see that number there at the bottom. The most likely total games is the distance, 7 at plus 175. How tightly contested is the Western Conference Finals about to be?
It's going to be really tightly contested. I would say at this point, again, I have a Stars future, but just objectively, I think taking the Oilers on a series price is fine at this point. Getting them at plus 155, that would imply that the series is going longer, so I would look to 6 or 7 games, you know, some kind of pairing of that. It's like, okay, the Oilers can certainly win game two. They were certainly in a spot to win game one. You get that little piece of that, you get a little piece of 6 or 7 games, and I think you would be in a good spot. Again, it does leave you potential to hedge out once we get to that 5th or 6th game, depending on when the series is.
Game number two tomorrow in Big D. The Stars an ever-so-slight home ice favorite. Total still at 6.5 for a playoff hockey game. It's high, of course. That went well over last night in game number one. Vecchio, in the Eastern Conference Finals between the Canes and the Panthers, Carolina dominant in its opening two series against the Devils and the Caps. But it's the Panthers, the reigning Stanley Cup champions, that have dominated Carolina in the last few postseasons. Florida winning game one, 5-2. On road ice in Raleigh against the Canes. The odds makers with Carolina as a slight home ice favorite tonight, expecting this series to be tied at a game apiece. Is that your expectation as well?
I would have to say yes, because the scoreboard at 5-2 doesn't really reflect how the Canes played. So I want to take what they did in game one, look to a prop in game two, Bobrovsky over 25.5 saves. 5-2 is a dramatic scoreline, but if we actually look at some of the deeper numbers, Carolina outshot them, or I should say shot attempts, 78-46 Carolina had, and then they had 33 shots on goal compared to the Panthers 20. You would say, looking at these numbers, Carolina dominated this game, 78 shot attempts compared to 46, but that they lost the game 5-2. So if they are controlling the pace of play, that means they have to get shots on, or they have been getting shots on goal. And now that they're down 0-1, they have to continue to get shots on goal. So Bobrovsky's line was 26.5 in game one. He ended with 31. He's now at 25, and the Carolina Hurricanes are playing from behind. They have to continue to get shots on goal. This game can't be flying over. I would say they win this game 3-1, 3-2. The Panthers had 1.78 expected goals, and they scored five. Way, way too much scoring.
5.5, that total. The under has the juice. We saw 7 combined goals in the opening game of the Eastern Conference Finals. Feel like tonight is an under. Playoff Bob sensational in game number one with 31 saves. The Panthers, the reigning Stanley Cup champs, now a hefty favorite to win the Eastern Conference Finals at minus 240. That's a big number. And Florida, a favorite to win a second consecutive cup at plus 175. If Florida gets their third consecutive appearance in the cup final. Tom Vecchio, as always, thank you for your time. That does it for the Early Line on this Thursday. Show returns tomorrow, 8 a.m. Eastern on a Friday.